Yeah, my brother-in-law, my poor brother-in-law, mm-hmm. they were dealing with a rescue. I don't remember. It was some small breed rescue, and mm-hmm. they had it set up, and he had to drive like 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 hours out. It was like halfway across Colorado to pick up this dog, and he got there, and he realized this dog is not the breed that they said it was. So it doesn't matter. He picks up the dog, and on the way back, the dog is barking the whole time, like absolutely going crazy. Aww. He stops at a park to let the dog do its business halfway uh-huh. on the way back.
Right.
The dog bites him and escapes.
No way.
So he spends like, I think, 2 hours chasing the dog down and then going to the emergency room, getting stitched up, gets back to the house and like, here's the dog. That's not a good way to introduce to a dog. But years later, I think the dog is like 15 years old. So they've had the dog, I think, for at least 10 years.
Okay.
And they love the dog. And the dog finally, after 10 years, stopped barking at me.
God, he'd barked for 10 years.
Yeah, Honey Bear turned out to be a good dog, but it took a little while.
Oh.
Took a little while to settle in.
Yeah, I had a Chihuahua, Tuffy, that my friend Lori came. I think she stayed for like a week or two, and the dog barked the whole time she was here.
Yeah, the little dogs. Just don't get little dogs. So, Catherine, you're talking about getting a new dog that hasn't been born yet, which is super creepy. But just go to the pound.
I tried.
Go to the rescue. Pick up a dog. Pick up a mutt. Oh. It should be black. It should have long ears. It should be at least 30 pounds, between 30 and 40 pounds.
Why?
Because that's a real dog. Okay, so did you want to talk about reality today?
Yeah, because like a real dog is not my reality.
You emailed me and you were talking about you wanted a new platform or
A new format.
A new format. Yeah, format's the big word I couldn't remember. You wanted a new format. Where we would talk about reality. And I'm thinking, what the hell does she think I have to go through when I talk to her? It's like every goddamn time I have to talk to her, I have to deal with an alternate reality. So my brain has to consider what is real when I talk to her because
no,
I don't know.
The format was like posing a question and then like discussing it, like fleshing it out. And it started when you sent me that awful TikTok about the flat earth theory.
Oh my gosh.
That it was so painful to watch. So painful. But okay, I laughed.
Hopefully most of our audience is educated enough to know about what's been going on with the flat earth creationist wackos. They have their own thing. I've seen a couple of videos just because it's entertaining to watch them try to talk about it. It's entertaining to watch them shoot themselves up in homemade rockets into the sky trying to prove that the earth is flat and killing themselves in the process. It's really fun to watch them run these experiments, and the experiment fails to prove that the earth is flat. It actually indicates that the earth is round, and they say, oh, well, we don't know why that experiment failed, but we're looking at another experiment that will definitely prove it. It's like they keep creating their own evidence that the earth is round and discounting it because it doesn't fit their theory.
Oh, that the earth is flat and discounting it.
But this woman is like from a whole different reality, a whole different universe. She is so dumb. I honestly was surprised that she had enough intellectual capacity to know how to use her phone. That's how dumb this woman was.
We'll have a link to the podcast now
and go take a look at it. Look at our webpage, subrantpodcast.com, episode 62, mm-hmm. and it will be in the show links.
I found it very painful to watch. There was a part of me that thought that she was just like trolling, particularly at the end when she had like the flat earth stuff and then she's sticking like buildings and mountains. And I was waiting for her to pour water in that was the only thing that was missing. I want her to pour water into the pan.
Because
she
poured water onto the globe.
We
have to set this up a little bit, but just to be clear, if she was being genuine, Or if she was trying to troll, I mean, she would literally deserve an Oscar for her performance because mm-hmm. this was very well played if she was just trolling. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was. I think this was genuine. I think she's just genuinely a stupid person. I'm sure she forgets to breathe sometimes.
It felt trolly to me because it was so outrageous.
But to put it in context, she has a small model globe that she's using to prove all of her points. And at one point, she takes the globe and she pours water on it and says, see, look, what happens when you pour water on a globe? It just falls off. So if you lived on a globe, wouldn't it just fall off? And the guy who's debunking this rightly points out, well, the water that you just poured on that tiny little globe mm-hmm. is being attracted to the big globe, the much mm-hmm. larger globe that you're actually on. That's called gravity. If you were in space, In space, it's, it would just bounce off because there's not enough gravitational pull.
Right.
Objects with more mass have more gravitational pull.
I think what it triggered for me, and I was triggered by that, was that I'm just getting the feeling that so many people now have just foregone reason and rational thought. And for some reason, they seem to really be enjoying this wacky belief system they're creating. And they're just creating it either on the fly or based in something, like she kept calling it the biblical earth, not flat earth.
The biblical shaped earth, because biblical is also now a shape, apparently.
Oh, it is. Okay. I did not know that. It's just that, it just continues. And it's just like, why? Why are they so into this brand of ignorance? Are they bored? Like, what is it? And so one answer I got is that conspiracy theories seem to thrive in times of crisis.
Well, I think there are two things going on here. There have always been really stupid people, but those stupid people have really had a hard time gaining a platform because you need to go through the gatekeepers to get to a platform to actually espouse your views. Now with social media, you can just espouse it, and if anybody wants to look at it, they can.
That's true.
So there's no gatekeeping. So it's easier to see the dumb people. They can really rise to the top.
It's astonishing.
So and we're always in times of crisis. We just always are. Humanity, that's just the way humanity rolls.
Yeah. Well, it just seems like it's an exponential.
I think it only seems like that because of the social media.
You really think? Because that makes me feel a little better, because I feel like people are crawling out from under rocks like in some weird zombie movie and just growing in like herds for these weird thought processes. And it's concerning to me. It actually bums me out if I think about it.
Rightly so. You should be a little bit concerned about the stupidity that's out there.
So anyway.
And the alternate realities that are being fabricated.
Right.
Sometimes artificially, by intelligent artificial things.
Exactly. And that was my other question, is like, does this growing appetite for these alternate realities, does that affect our perspective, our perceptions of art? And what is art then? And so I started thinking about the AI and all the conversations we were having about the artificially, intelligently generated images.
It's just artificial intelligence. I was just playing with the words, but you could just say artificial intelligence. I didn't mean to
or AI
mess up your cognitive understanding of the words.
My cognitive function.
Yes.
Or lack thereof this morning. I still am working on the coffee. So what'd you think about this guy at the Colorado State Fair?
Boy, Jason, that was Allen. Quite a story. So apparently in this past year, Jason Allen went to the state fair. They have art exhibits at the state fair, and they have competitions. And he put in a piece that he had created through, which one was it? One of the AI.
And he actually entered it into the digital art.
Right. He put it in digital art, but he, which software was he using to create it?
I think he, oh God.
Oh, Midjourney.
It was Midjourney. Okay. Yeah. Midjourney.
So he used the AI program Midjourney, which is an AI system for generating imagery. He used that and he declared it. When he put his work in, he said, this is an AI-generated image in the digital arts image, and it won. And people kind of lost their minds over that.
I didn't understand why they lost their minds, because he disclosed it, and it was digital art. That was the category.
One of the judges admitted later to saying that she didn't realize that it was artificially created, because she hadn't really guessed. I guess she hadn't done her homework.
I guess digital art isn't necessarily artificially created, but they never specified.
You can debate that because the computer is an artificial thing.
Right.
And, pixels are artificial, I guess, to some degree.
Right. Well, so is the paintbrush and paint.
Well, but that's physical. That's analog.
Oh, okay. You're saying like more ethereal.
Yeah, you can make the argument, I'm just saying.
Right. Well, the argument that I would make in favor of this guy is that digital art, by definition, is just art made and presented using digital technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. And he disclosed that he used another tool, which we agreed a couple podcasts ago that these AI generation products, whatever, are tools. And so I think they were really debating idea versus technical execution.
I think there's a genuine question, though, and I think it was worth asking, because it's not just a tool, but it's also a tool that's doing a lot more work than we're used to.
That is true.
Photoshop can do a lot of work for you, but you have to do 99% of the work in Photoshop. It can do some things for you. It can create textures, and it can try to guess what, if you're trying to expand something, it can do content-aware filling and replacing, and there's a lot of things that it tries to do smartly, but the hand of the artist is driving the work, whereas if you're using an AI generator, Is there the hand of the artist in that? And that's a genuine question to ask, because if you're not familiar with the system, you don't know the answer to it. So we'll answer that for you.
Okay, answer it.
And the hand of the artist becomes a more of a questionable term in this circumstance, because you're not using your hand so much as you're using text prompts. So you're using your mind, to try to guide a computer to create an image for you. Mm-hmm. So there's still the intent of the artist behind it. And he's just directing the computer to try to get the image he's looking for. And this image that we're talking about is a really interesting image. I think it lands more in the illustration side than the art side, mm-hmm. but it's still a very compelling image. And it's it looks, if you're familiar with the Hudson School of Art, which was 19th century American painters
right.
who painted beautiful vistas of the Hudson Valley, just gorgeous Arcadian style stuff. You know, the light was golden and it kind of looked a little bit like Thomas Kincaid. Kincaid is kind of like a bad knockoff of this. And interestingly, the interesting combination here is that it has that vibe, that stylistic quality to it from the Hudson School of Art. But also he has small figures placed in his scene, which was also very common of the Hudson Valley School of Art. So he's really riffing off of that. And that's one of the questions is, does he know that he's riffing off of the Hudson Valley School? Does he know what the source of this is? Is that important? I think it's a little bit important, but I'm not sure it's that important. But anyway, the picture is, you know, this golden light, classically oriented. You have this huge room that you're in mm-hmm. that has this huge round opening, and it's like nothing we've seen before. And outside of that is a beautiful landscape that is kind of fading into this golden mist. It's a really nice piece. It kind of gets you in the mood of fanciful Arthurian legend, kind of. I don't know. It puts you in a very fanciful mood.
Yes. No, agreed. Yeah, I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask him if he saw any references to Kincaid.
Well, Catherine, he's not here. And I was thinking
he's
more
not here.
The Hudson School more mm-hmm. than more than Kincaid. Kincaid, like I said, is kind of like a bad knockoff of the Hudson School.
Right. Which kind of brings us to, I don't know, I didn't really have any issue. And maybe in the future, if they start creating some sort of protocols around AI-generated art, maybe next year the Colorado State Fair, can have an AI-generated section. You know, just be clear, digital AI.
It sounds an awful lot like when photography started taking off.
Yes.
And people were arguing, this is not art. You can do it. You don't have to sit down for 3 hours and make a painting. That's not art then. You just take a picture, a snapshot. It takes no time at all to make these things. That's not art. You got to sit down and, you know, really take time and do it. You got to learn how to paint. You got to figure out how to compose things. And it really feels a lot like that. And that was one of the interesting comments, one of the criticisms thrown at this. So the quote from one of the people who were complaining about it was, software can potentially produce unlimited works of beautiful art at a rate that no human working mm-hmm. without the tools could match. It's like productivity in the art world. How can we let this stand?
Right, but like, at a rate no human can match. But, I mean, is there a race to create a plethora of a product as an artist? I guess to some extent you would want to do that, but that's what printing presses and things are for. I mean, you can make prints of your work, but to me, it's in the technical execution.
Well, part of it's in technical execution.
Part
but,
of it
but
is.
The question or the this criticism in itself has the words of its own defeat, because it says potentially produce unlimited works of beautiful art. Okay, isn't that the purpose?
Right.
If we can make beautiful art, shouldn't we make beautiful art? Isn't beautiful art better than bad art, which we are drenched in day after day?
Drenched. Drenched is a good word. Smothered.
I mean, how many mannequins? How many molested mannequins do I have to deal with?
Oh, stop. They're just very happy here. But the idea versus technical execution debate, like they referenced in the article, has been going on since the Renaissance, right? That's what it said.
I think, yeah, as you said, execution. At the end of the day, isn't it more important what the thing looks like and how you feel about it?
I think so. But for me, it still brought up the same questions. Like, where are these images coming from? Are they vetted appropriately? Are there copyright violations? Do the artists, who were the actual creators, know that their images are in essence being sampled? So to me, there's
Before we get to that point, can I just make one other analogy?
Sure.
To another
sure.
art, quote, art form
sure.
That has been taken over by digital distribution and creation?
Go.
Music.
Yeah, the music sampling. That's what I was just getting to.
Oh, no. You were going down a different road, which is totally great. I just thought I wanted to keep these things together because I think that was, you know, it's another analogy. And people were worried, well, you know, if people just can type in and get artwork, then it's going to degenerate and it's just going to get to the lowest common denominator. And yeah, that's probably what's going to happen. It's not much worse than what we have now. And you're still going to have people who want the real, quote, the real thing. And there, you know, there are all kinds of different people out there looking for different things. So right. It's not a valid argument.
What's not a valid argument?
The fact that it's, well, you know, if you let the masses start making their own artwork, it's going to devalue the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. I don't think it's going to devalue it. I think, to me, it's about copyright and ideas. Yeah, you can't, like, copyright an idea. But you can copyright the expression of the idea. And so when you're sampling, even in music, sampling, to me, was problematic because they're sampling excerpts of an artist's actual work. It's like Snoop Dogg's voice or someone's voice or their work and like or the beat.
Well, some of those artists do pay for the samples.
Right, but initially I don't know if they did.
There's and a so point. Of course not. But there's a point at which the sampling artist,
yes,
will realize that they need to pay a copyright to keep, you know, to stay free of the copyright infringement. I think the copyright is absolutely mad. It's overused and it's like a cudgel being used to beat down original creativity. But that's just my opinion.
To me, it does have like a link to the music industry with the sampling. And so if someone takes pains to like learn their craft, fulfill their idea, you know, massage it and technique wise, and then it's just out there on the internet. And now someone samples that work and incorporates it into some Kincaidian thing, you know, Vista or whatever.
Artwork.
You know, I'm not sure that that's, I mean, is it fair or isn't it fair? And I think that's where I, you know, and I'd posed that question a couple podcasts ago. It's like, where are these coming from? And we were hoping that like Google and some of these places would vet the images and have them be like copyright free zones and, you know, it would be all legit. But what I was learning, like through Midjourney and Stable Diffusion, these image synthesis platforms, that they are just taking work.
The AI generation systems are based on databases of images.
Yes.
And we don't know where the Google database came from. Obviously,
right,
it came from somewhere in Google, and we mm-hmm. were hoping, speculating that they probably have some vetting of the images so they're not violating copyright or maybe to a lesser extent. But let's be clear. The newest one that people are using, the newest database people are using, is really kind of like pirate internet days. It's like they just go out and they scour the internet for whatever images they can find that have text related to them to understand what's in the image. And so this newest generation of Stable Diffusion and Midjourney mm-hmm. are using images that are just pilfered from the internet.
Yeah, they analyze millions of images, often without consent from the artist or copyright
holders. No, not often without, but without consent.
Without.
With no consent. So they're just pulling stuff that's been published and training their database on or their programs on that.
Right.
So that's a little bit more problematic.
That was my question all along and my concern all along. And it's like, so this one database, the Leon 58 database, and we'll link it. You can actually search your own name, and artists were not happy when they found their images in the database. And I thought that was very interesting, you know, that they just didn't even know.
Well, how would you? There's no
you
reason
wouldn't.
Why. It's not like they're sending you an email. Oh, by the way, we've cataloged 53 of your images, and we've now included that into our database, which is going to be used in artificial intelligence generation creation tools. Yeah, that might be a little problematic. My counterpoint to that is artists, we look at stuff, and we absorb stuff. And that's basically just taking what we see, reshaping it, and using that as inspiration to create something. And if you start making stuff that looks like someone else's stuff, then you suddenly have created a new school or a new movement. That's how movements get started, you know. Cézanne was not the only person practicing cubism. Cubism was a thing because a bunch of artists got together and were doing the same thing at the same time.
Correct, right.
I can see how that's not a full counter to your argument.
It's not.
And I think it is a little bit problematic that an artist's style can be reutilized like that without as much thought or even recognition. At least, you know, the difference here is at least when I look at the Hudson School of Art and if I'm painting something, I know where that source is coming from. And that doesn't seem like it might be that important, but it's a question of acknowledgement, and it's a question of education and knowing what you're doing.
Yes.
and knowing that you're calling back, like, you could get yourself in a lot of trouble if you don't know your sources, your source material.
True.
Like, you could wind up with someone in blackface in the back of one of your images without knowing it, or knowing what the history of blackface is.
That is true. And what's even worse, I mean, or equally egregious, I guess, is, you know, the someone took the time to learn their craft and focus on their work. They did the work. And now you can, with prompts and, you know, creative prompts, and even more, you said that they weren't just prompts anymore. I mean, these are like finely lengthy descriptions.
Yeah, it's like I was talking about earlier. Once you start using these tools, you get to learn how to use them, right? After
yes.
just a few minutes, I got to understand a little bit how it's working. And the longer you work with them, the better you get at using the tool and getting the results that you want. And the idea that, well, just because you can do it faster makes it less valuable seems kind of stupid to me, because that's what progress is about. So we've been doing, that's why we invented computers, so we could do things faster and more accurately than we could in the past.
Right.
And yeah, guess what? The robots came for our manufacturing jobs, and everybody cried about that, but we moved on. The robots are coming for our creative jobs too, and, you know, we're going to have to deal with that. That's just the nature of progress.
Do you think the robots will really come for all the creative work?
I don't see why not.
But sculpture seems exempt from this, or isn't it?
Why would it
maybe
be exempt?
Maybe not. Yeah, with the printers, the 3D printers
yeah,
and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, these are still different things, though. Well, right now, you still have to print these things out like a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, honestly, at the end of the day, it's just a new category of art. You know, you're not going to put an artificially created digital artwork next to a painting, because you don't do that with photography. You don't put those in the same category.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different category that we have to look at. And some people are going to still like oil on canvas painting. Some people are going to like, you know, carved wooden sculptures. Some people are going to like AI generated art.
Are you saying then they shouldn't compete, like getting back to the Colorado State Fair, that they shouldn't compete in the same categories because they're really distinct categories?
Well, it's its own category. Now, if you want to have a general open category, I wouldn't be opposed to the idea of having separate categories, but at the end of the day, you also crown one piece as just being the best art of the year.
Right.
You could do that too. So I'll allow that.
You'll allow that? Okay.
I'll allow it. Just so you guys know,
okay, well,
James
we'll
is allowing it,
okay.
So it's allowed.
How would you feel if you searched your name and found your images on the database? Would you be happy?
God damn it, Catherine, I did search and nothing came up.
Did you?
I was like, well, what the hell, man?
Did you see your bum
down? Am I just
part of the...
I'm just not important enough to be part of your damn... Can I be part of your database? Can I put my work in there? I want to see what happens when people reuse my work. They use it.
That would actually be kind of fun.
I think it would be. It's like I'm making any money off of it, so I don't care if someone else does.
That reminds me, like, I was setting up a show one time at Festivus.
I mean, goddammit, I exist too.
I know. Well, I exist too. But this is my story. I have to tell you my story. I was setting up my little booth at Festivus, and I had a bunch of heads, obviously, you know, because I was selling, you know, knitted wear.
Obviously, you have a bunch of severed heads.
Obviously, I had
booth.
A bunch of severed heads. And so, and they were very cutely decoupaged. It was just the sweetest little display, and I'd worked very hard on it. And as I'm setting it up, all these people were kind of milling around, and no one was there other than the other artists or makers, you know, there. And so some gal finally was like kind of nominated to come and approach me. And she's like, what are you selling? I'm like, well, I'm just getting my display ready because I'm selling like these knitted hats and some outerwear and handbags, etc. That's all the stuff I'm knitting and felting and whatever. And she's like, oh, because we all want these heads.
Back away from the heads.
I'm not sure where I'm going with this.
Back away from the heads.
And I'm like, well, you know, after the show, you're more than welcome. I said, I mean, they're just decoupage. It was nothing. Like, if you want some, I'll give them to you. I don't really care. She's like, oh, no, we'll buy them. I think
yeah.
I sold a lot
oh,
of my
Catherine,
display
you
pieces.
You are a terrible salesperson.
I know. I give everything away. But anyway, so the next year, this other gal, she was selling, I don't know, headbands or whatever. And she came up to me and she's like, I hope you're okay. You know, she goes, I want to use your idea for the heads, but I didn't want to do it this year. And I had already changed my heads. They were all in camouflage now and they were spray painted and stuff. And she's like, I wanted to do it. And I have some experimental ones. And she showed me pictures. She goes, I did want to bring them because I knew you'd be at the show. It was the next Festivus. She goes, but can I have permission to do that next year? And I said, you should have just done it this year. I said, by the time you do what I'm doing something else. So it doesn't matter. You don't have to ask permission.
Yeah, just go for it, people.
Just go for it.
I don't want to be sexist, but is that as a female thing? As a male, I would have just gone. I would have done it.
That's what I told her. And she was like, oh. And she's like, thank you for saying that. And I'm like, no, seriously, if you like some. I said, to me, it's like an homage. You're enjoying my. It wasn't even my work. It was just some creative funk that I put together for the display. I just love doing displays. I used to work in, you know, I worked with mannequins. I worked with window displays. I love display. I love marketing. Like, I love all that merchandising stuff. And so it was very creative. It was very fun. I'm like, yeah, go for it. I don't know if it's a female thing or not. I thought it was very nice that she asked me if she can kind of rip off my idea.
Not rip off.
And then the next year
it's
I went.
It's not ripping off, though.
No, it isn't.
It's inspiration. And that's the whole thing. If I had done something inspired by someone else and they came over and I'd be, hey, oh, it's a thanks, man, for giving this idea. I clearly built on your idea and did my own thing with it. If they were mad at me, I'd be like, well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, this is called creativity. This is how things work.
Right. And so the next year,
if you
want
to sue me, go for it, but you're not going to get anywhere.
Well, it's an idea. And it's like, if I don't own the idea of decoupaging shit on a mannequin head. You know, it's like I own the expression of that idea. And so I had expressed that idea to the fullest with that particular display. I either sold or gave away probably all of them at the end of the show. It didn't mean shit to me. And I changed everything the next year. I mean, what difference does it make? You're moving forward.
It's an important point, though, is that if someone expresses an interest in your thing, mm-hmm. and I know it's against your instinct. It's against your instinct to think about this. The moment someone expresses interest in something of yours, it has value.
Oh,
and you have to recognize that and just turn the salesperson part of your brain on. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I can't sell them until after the show. But yes, at that point, they're between $200 and $300, depending upon.
Like the Dada heads.
Oh, I don't know if I have that much. And it's like, well, there are some that will be less expensive, you know, the $50 to $100 range as well. It's like, oh, well, I can do that.
God, you should have been there. Where were you 7 years ago?
I was here.
Oh, okay.
Lurking in the background.
Okay. Yeah, I should have just gone all Dada head on it. Maybe that's the next version. You know, so, I mean, I'm okay because to me it is an iterative process. And once I've kind of exhausted my idea or that energy for that idea, I just kind of move on.
The idea that you own a creative expression is really silly and it's against the creative process. You know, it's just, it's not, it's antithetical.
You know,
we create, we share. We get ideas from other people, we reinterpret, we make stuff.
That's why creative ideas is not considered part of copyright. I mean, you can't, there's no like...
You can kind of do that.
Well, only with like Mickey Mouse, like the Disney stuff with their, I mean,
well,
stuff like that.
Those are specific images though. That's specific copyright and specific images. Right. But getting back to the stuff we were talking about, another quote that I really liked was,
oh no.
Quote, we're watching the death of artistry unfold right before our eyes. If creative jobs aren't safe for machines, then even high-skilled jobs are in danger of becoming obsolete. Yeah, welcome to the real world, buddy. Did you cry when the robots came for the manufacturing jobs?
Probably. They probably cried. I cried. I know. I cry a lot, though.
Welcome to the 21st century, guys.
Yeah.
And this is just how it's going to go. It's faster than I thought it was going to happen. These things are really taking over. There's some online communities, art communities, that have banned AI images from their platforms. And I'm okay with that. Like, again, you know, when photography came out, they were putting it in shows next to oil paintings. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, does that make sense? Or do we want to, you know, it's not the same thing, so it should have its own category. And that's fine. I totally get if you want, quote, a safe space for your curated analog artwork, that's okay. And it's totally okay to have different categories for things.
Yeah, I think it'll be the rage for a while, and then it'll come into its own.
Well, that's my next question, Catherine. Mm-hmm. How will AI affect the art world?
I think it'll just come into its own. I think that people, you know, a lot of people who don't know and don't care where their images are generated from. I think there are a lot of people who will use these tools who will just have fun with it. And they'll spit out images without any thought or caring about where the images came from.
So you're saying random people doing random stuff.
Random people doing random stuff. And they may produce something fun.
Kind of like what's happened with NFTs, right? You're just spitting out random crap just to experiment with the system.
Right. You experiment and some of it will be good and some of it will be not good.
Most of it will be terrible crap.
And most of it will be terrible crap and it'll kind of run its course and people will get bored with it. And then there will be some people who adopt this as the way that they're expressing their art.
And they'll become masters of it.
And they'll become masters at it. Yeah, I think that's where it's going to go.
So this is my crystal ball for the art world and AI.
All right.
First, the art world, the official art world, you know.
Yes.
The high-end galleries and whatnot will try to profit from it because they'll splash it on their big pages and this will be the big new thing and everybody has got to come and see it and share it and all that stuff, right?
Maybe.
Well, that's what they do. They always try to co-op whatever it is for marketing purposes. And this is a marketing thing. This is something new that people can get excited about. And then there will be the immune response, people rejecting it because, oh, this isn't art. So there'll be this big kerfuffle and most of it will be in the public square. Mostly just to gain attraction for themselves, to gain notoriety. And then, over the course of time, it will become a normalized part of the art world, just like photography was. That's my three-step process of how things become absorbed into the art world, or most worlds.
So you think the galleries will just look at the money aspect?
Do I have to answer that question?
I just want to hear it again.
Yes, they will look at the money aspect and just figure out how they can get people, sucker people into overpaying for artificially generated artwork, regardless of how bad it is.
Well, you know, and they do support art that's bad anyway. So what difference does it make, right? I would think that some galleries would pull a snoot and be like, nah, this isn't art, and straight out of the gate wouldn't support it. But on the other hand, I do agree with you that since they do support such a lot of crap that is art or is marketed as art, you know, there are so many things out there that trigger me. I guess maybe you're right.
No, you can just say I'm right.
You're correct. Yeah, it's hard to use the term right at this point.